Let's move this forward a bit, Nick. Is that okay? Right. Well, I'll call our meeting to order this afternoon. My name is Tom Berger, and this is the Alaska Native Review Commission. I want to welcome you all and thank you for coming. And maybe you will forgive me if I spend a few minutes right now telling you why I'm here and why we're holding this meeting. The Alaska Native Review Commission was established to consider the impact of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971. Here in Alaska, a land claim settlement was enacted by Congress back in 1971, and that was a landmark not only for Alaska and the United States, but It was considered to be a landmark in many other countries around the world. In this state in 1971, the settlement provided that Alaska Natives were to receive 44 million acres of land and $962.5 million, and Native corporations were established, and that settlement now has been in place for 13 years. So a lot of people, especially Alaska Natives, want to know, well, how did it all work out? What's happened in 13 years? Was it a good settlement? Was it a bad settlement? Was it partly good, partly bad? What's the story? So a lot of people wanted to know, and so the Inuit Circumpolar Conference, the ICC, which is an international organization of Eskimos from Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, decided to set up a commission to review the land claim settlement here in Alaska to see what Alaska Natives thought about it and to see what lessons could be learned not only for Alaska but for other places in the world where Native people are engaged in settling their land claims. So they asked me to come and hold these hearings and find out what people like yourselves have to say about the land claim settlement here in Alaska. And I've been traveling around the state all year. I started at the beginning of the year in Amonic and Tununuk. Those were the first two villages where I held meetings. And since then, we've held meetings in 35 villages and towns altogether. And at these meetings, we've invited people to come forward and talk about the land claim settlement and the corporations in 1991 and all of these other questions. And so far, about 700 people have spoken at these meetings and expressed their views about the land claim settlement. Now, I'm going to be here in Nome today and tomorrow, and we're holding a meeting here tonight again at 7 o'clock. And then we're holding a meeting for the elders at the Senior Citizens Center tomorrow at 10 in the morning. And then we'll be back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon to carry on with this meeting for the second day. And then on Wednesday, we're going to Gamble, and then on Thursday to Shishmaref, and then on Friday to Unalakleet to see what Alaska Natives and non-Native Alaskans living here in the Bering Straits region think about the settlement. Now, I understand that some of you here are students, and maybe I could just say a little bit about the Alaska land claim settlement. It's called ANCSA, and I think most people in Alaska know what you mean when you talk about ANCSA. But I come from Canada. I spent 3 years in the Canadian Arctic back in the 70s reviewing the land claims of the Eskimos and the Indians of the Canadian North. And then I wrote a report for the Canadian government on those land claims. And while I was doing that work, I spent some time in Alaska, and I guess that's why they asked me to come and conduct these meetings now in 1984. But I've looked at land claim settlements in many countries, and the settlement here in Alaska is unique in a way. It's one of a kind. Because here Congress said, well, we will settle your claims with you, but you must establish corporations and we will turn the land over to the corporations. And that had not been done before in the United States or anywhere else. So everybody has watched very closely to see how you have managed to get along here, how these corporations have worked out, and what guarantees there are for the preservation of native land, for ensuring that native ancestral land remains in native hands in the future. And here, 12 regional corporations were established and 200 village corporations, and they were authorized to make selections of land, and those selections have been made and are still being made. And eventually, native corporations in Alaska are to hold 44 million acres in fee simple. Congress did something else. They said, well, the land that the villages get, they will be entitled to hold the surface rights, but we will give the subsurface rights to the regional corporations. And that was something quite new. And I'd like to know how that's worked out, how the people here feel about that arrangement, that division of resources. Congress also passed a law in ANCSA. They said that because you're getting this land and this money, we are going to abolish your Aboriginal title and extinguish is the word that's used, extinguish your Aboriginal rights of hunting and fishing and trapping. And that's what it says in ANCSA, Native people in Alaska were to get corporations and the corporations were to get land and money, but you were not to get any guarantees of subsistence rights in the future. Those were extinguished, those were abolished under ANCSA. And of course, any claim you might have to any land besides the 44 million acres was extinguished. Well, Congress also provided that after 20 years, the shares that Native people received in these corporations would go on the market. That is, 20 years after the settlement, and the settlement was in 1971, so 20 years later takes you to 1991. They provided that after 1991, those shares could be sold to anybody, which means that there can be takeover bids by other corporations, by non-natives, by people in the lower 48, Japan, Australia, wherever. Outsiders can make takeover bids for native corporations after 1991, which means if they succeeded, they would own the corporation and they'd own the land, and it wouldn't be native land anymore, at least not in law. So wherever I've gone, and I've been traveling now all year, I've asked people like yourselves what they think of all that. Do you think that you should sell your shares in 1991? After all, you would presumably get some money and you could then buy a snow machine or fix up the roof on your house or put the money in the bank or something else. But and I've asked people, well, is that what you'd like to do? Or do you think it's better that Native people should hang on to their shares, hang on to their land? And I've also asked them to consider whether the corporations are the best means of holding native land. Even if you don't sell your shares, your shareholders are still majority native shareholders. If your corporation goes bankrupt or if it incurs a lot of debts it can't pay, then it might have to give up its land to its creditors. You could lose your land that way. And of course, after 1991, in the years after 1991, the land the corporations hold can be taxed by the state or by a city government or by a borough government. And if the state, I read in the paper that the revenue from Prudhoe Bay may start to decline in the 1990s. Well, if the state starts looking around for other sources of revenue, there's 44 million acres of private land held by native corporations in this state that would be liable to be taxed by the state. There is no state property tax. There may never be one, but it's one of those things that you should think about, because if a tax were imposed and your corporation couldn't pay the tax, then the land could be taken by the state. Well, I mention these things because they've come up everywhere I've been, and people have had ideas about what they want to do. A few people have said, well, I just want to sell my shares and get some money and get something out of this settlement. That's a minority view. For the most part, people have said, well, this is native land, and we think it should stay in native hands and be passed on from our generation to the next. We need it for subsistence. Our children and their children may need it for subsistence, so it's our duty to hold on to it. That's what most people have said, but I don't know how you feel about it, you tell me. I'm going to stop talking in a minute, and then you'll be able to tell me. Yes, sir.
I'd like to know if my nieces are entitled to that land claim, or my grandchildren entitled to their land claim. What they gonna do about me and my wife's only, 160 acres apiece?
Could you come to the microphone and give us your name, sir? Right there, if you would.
I'm from White Mountain, and I'd like to know if my nieces, they're going to be the head of the family in some times, and they weren't entitled to this land claim when the land claim came up. And I'd like to know why can't the government open the land claim every so often for our natives so they can have entitled to this land, so they won't fight over me and their my wife's claim? I don't know, It's something. I'm not like you people. I never even graduated from high school, but I think I know what's going to happen pretty soon. We got to buy everything pretty soon, even probably pay our children's education. That's all.
Could you give us your name, sir?
My name's Steve Ugluin from White Mountain.
Thank you, sir. Well, maybe I could carry on from on the point that has just been raised. If you have a native allotment, then that is yours. It doesn't belong to the corporations. If you have a 160-acre native allotment or a smaller allotment than that, that can't be taken over in 1991. You don't have to worry about your allotment in 1991 because that's your own private property. It doesn't belong to the corporation. It can't be taxed either. If you look at your certificate, you'll see that it's a land that can't be taxed by the state. So the allotments are not at risk, so to speak. The other point that has been raised everywhere I've gone, that is, in 1971, Congress said that every Native person alive at that time would receive shares. But what happens to all the children born since 1971? They're not entitled to be enrolled as shareholders. So wherever I've gone, people have said, why were our children left out of this settlement? Why can't you open the rolls so that they can be issued shares, so that they can be made shareholders? That's something that a lot of people want something to be done about. Maybe I could just tell you some of the things that have been suggested at the places I've been, and then we can hear from others. Some people have said, well, maybe Congress should be asked to pass a law that says we can't, that Native people can't sell their shares. Congress has already passed a law saying that Native corporations can restrict restrict voting rights of non-Native shareholders, and Congress has also said that Native corporations could require their own shareholders to give the corporations a right of first refusal. So some people have said, well, let's change ANCSA and see if we can make the corporations the most effective vehicle for holding the land in the future. Others have said, well, no, we should transfer our land to IRA governments and let them hold the land because they can't be taken over by outsiders and they can't be taxed, and the land passes from one generation to the next without there having to be shares sold or anything like that. Well, I want to hear about these things. I think that I may not have answered your question fully, sir. When Congress passed ANCSA, they said there will be no more Native allotments, so that the people who got Native allotments of 160 acres before 1971 are, in a sense, the lucky ones. And Congress said that after 1971, we won't allow any more Native allotments. But what we're talking about here, really, is the land the corporations received and the money and how people here feel about the settlement, how it's worked out for them, the good side and the bad side, and where you want to go in the future, what you foresee for Alaska Natives in the Bering Straits region. Well, if you wouldn't mind coming forward to have some, when you have something to say, you might come to the microphone that Mr. Agluinga of White Mountain spoke at, or come and sit here at this microphone. The only reason for using the microphones is so that everything you say can be taken down on tape and typed up, and then there will be a permanent record of what you, Alaska Natives, think about your land claim settlement. And my report, which will be made public next summer, will be based on what you've told me, based on what is taken down at these meetings. So.
Hi, I've got a perfect solution. I'll let you go home. My name is Leora Kinnick, and I live here in Nome. The question of how Alaska Native land claims has affected me has been a continuous one since I've been called almost 2 weeks ago, being notified about this hearing. First of all, I was in Anchorage when I learned that all Natives were being enumerated and papers were to be filed out at the BIA. Things were sketchy then for explanation, and I've been in quandary till last week's supplement issue in the Tundra Times. It seems the Native leaders have finally unsnarled some of the mess that was created by whoever to finally explain it in detail, what those folks out there want to do or are trying to do. Over the years, I've heard a lot of new terms like conveyance, reconveyance, allotments, D2, native corporations, shareholders, afterborns, who may as well be considered now as walking afterbirths, and the ever-pressing year of 1991. Through my lack of understanding all these years, I've missed out on my native allotment, and I've yet to decipher what all that meant or means. Now I understand if I want a campsite, I have to file every year for a land parcel. All I can tell you truthfully is that ANSCA has been a massive confusion for me, and that the Western civilization, as it looks to me now, is a pretty horrible picture of a huge head of a rabid dog drooling at the mouth over this vast country of ours, waiting for the time to spoil it. I hope that that time will never come, where it will attack our country, and that remedies can be made so we can carry on again as before, to continue our lives without all these limitations that have been encroached on us since this big mess started up. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. We have a list of people who've asked to have an opportunity to speak, they should feel free to come forward at any time. Mr. Jack Brown from White Mountain, Peter and Rita Buck from White Mountain, Kenneth Sugar Ruck from White Mountain, Alfred Podruck, and Job Kokochurak from Kolovin, Siegfried Agnkanguk, Florence Waloya, from Council Gary Longley and Karen Dixon, and from Elam Betty Seagock and Hans Jemowak, and from Nome Caleb Pengawi and Leela Oman. So I think Mr. Longley wanted to speak early on. I hope I did my best pronouncing those names. This is my first trip here, so you don't always get them right the first time.
I'm kind of old, so I think I'll sit. Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Gary T. Longley, Sr. I'm an enrolled member of Nome Eskimo Community, which is an IRA council. I'm chairman of Council Native Corporation, chairman of Council Traditional Council, and I'm a member of the Board of Directors of Bering Straits Native Corporation, representing the Village of Council. Since I currently am enrolled, an enrolled member of Nome and Council, I'd like to state publicly that I will submit a request to Nome Eskimo Community to be dropped from their roles in the near future, so I won't be enrolled in two different councils. When the land claims was first talked about, I was asked by Jerome Trigg Sr., who was president of Arctic Native Brotherhood, which was the regional nonprofit at that time, to attend a congressional hearing in Kotzebue in 1966 on the land claims history and issues. Later in 1969, I helped organize the Upper Kuskokwim Native Association and subsequently was elected chief of that organization. In 1970, all chiefs and regional association presidents, or chairmen as the case may be, were polled to see if we agreed on settling the land claims issue. The figures at that time that were presented to us were 12 million acres and $100 million. We agreed to that figure, and I was pleasantly surprised to hear of the final figures that you mentioned earlier that were settled on. Looking back, I would say that a major mistake that the original leaders made was not to have taken the time to have our acceptance of these figures ratified by the vote of our constituents. However, at that time, we had all agreed to take such a vote. But due to the time element and a substantial expense, it just wasn't done. Generally speaking, I firmly believe that the settlement of the Land Claims Act has been good for the Native people and also for all residents of the state of Alaska. Major benefits which have come about because of the claims are as follows. Number one, Native stockholders received a monetary distribution from the village corporation. In most Bering Straits villages, that figure was $2,000 per capita. Our largest village, Sitnasauk, which is Nome, chose not to make the distribution, but instead invested the money in capital projects within the city of Nome. Number two, state residents have received two distributions thus far, one for $1,000 and one for roughly $385, plus all residents are expecting a third one in the amount of roughly $330 in the next few days. These distributions would never have been made available unless the land claims were settled, which allowed the pipeline to be built. Number three, numerous capital projects have been funded by the state. And I think you can see that by just looking in any village, is a big increase over what used to be. And the governor has paid back a considerable amount to the permanent fund, all because of oil revenue. Number four, most village corporations, as a matter of fact, all except Mary's Igloo in the Bering Straits region, have received their interim conveyance. Several have made money because of gravel sales and mineral exploration. Five, and one of the earlier speakers alluded to this, many villages are now beginning to think along the lines of dissolution of cities, thus allowing the IRA or traditional council to be in a position to exercise their sovereign power. It would be very difficult to exercise sovereign power over only people. Therefore, the next logical step might be to dissolve the village corporation and allow them to exercise sovereign power over not only people, but land. This would provide one organization power base in each village with sovereign authority over the people and, of course, the land. They would also be eligible for state and federal funding. In conclusion, Your Honor, the Land Claim Settlement Act has been generally good to all villages. But more importantly, it has allowed the Native people to incorporate a major asset, the land base, and substantial money to do what they want, to be able to unite and to control their own destiny. If you've got any questions, I'd sure be glad to answer, but.
Yeah, well, to start with, could we have your written statement? Thanks. When you began, you said that you were chairman of the traditional council at council.
That's right.
And you said you were chairman of the village corporation council.
That's right.
And you don't have a state chartered government at council then?
No, we don't. It's an unincorporated community.
So your suggestion, you put it forward for consideration, that the corporate land in some way be transferred to the traditional council would leave the council with the land base to govern and, as you say, inherent sovereignty over the people there.
Yes. I think our problem is a lot more simple than other villages. I've heard about Stebbins, Koyuk, Akichuk, and so on. They're talking about dissolving to do something along this line. If we chose
At Akichuk, they dissolved the state-chartered city government.
But I guess what I'm saying is we're kind of fortunate in that we don't have that entity there now. So our village is small. Year-round is probably 18, 20 people at the most that live there. So we've got a lot of room now that we can make our own decisions. And we don't have to undo something. We can start from scratch and only grow. I think it's unfortunate. It's taken most of the 20 years to get ourselves in a position to do this.
Under ANCSA, and I've just mentioned this for the sake of the students here, 1,280 acres is to be turned over by each village corporation to a local state chartered government or placed in trust against the day when one will be established. Have you done anything about Section 14C3?
Yes, Your Honor, we have. The recommendation from our land committee, I'm chairman of the land committee, and I have one other member here, Karen Dixon, is also on the land committee, has recommended to the board, and we will have the final figures to them on October 12th, that approximately 80 to 100 acres be held by the state in trust in the event that a future city is ever established. So we've negotiated much below the 1,280. We've talked with the state already, and they have agreed that that size of a parcel would be fine for a small village like Council.
But if the traditional council exercises all local governmental powers, then the question really isn't an important one.
It is and it isn't, Your Honor, because we felt that, we kept it fairly small. Council is a gold-rich country. We felt if we kept it fairly small, the regional corporation, since they own the subsurface, might be able to do something along the line of taking gold or whatever minerals out, hopefully without disturbing the lifestyle of the people that are living there.
Well, that was going to be my next question. If you were to dissolve the village corporation or in some way transfer its assets to the local traditional council, and if that pattern were followed around the state using IRAs or whatever, you would still have subsurface resources held. The village wouldn't own, the council wouldn't own the subsurface resources. Those would still be held by the regional.
That's right.
Corporation. Well, if that's a satisfactory arrangement, nothing more need be said. But have you considered whether any change is appropriate there?
Well,
you're on the board of the regional corporation too.
Yes, sir.
So
that gives me a little conflict in my own brain. But I really think that if it were possible, if there's some way to change the laws so that the village corporation, and if we transfer to traditional, could keep the subsurface resources, I think we would like to make that, we'd like to have that happen. I don't know if all villages in the state of Alaska are ready to take over that responsibility or not. I would say most of them probably are.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom Berger, and thank you, everybody that come along. Right now, I want to thank our leaders and the people that are chosen to lead us on this very hard decision and very hard living. When we went through land claims in 1971, we knew that in 20 years there was going to be a change. When you look at 20 years from 1971, that's a very long time. But here it is, 1984, and now we are pushing right against 1991. And there is still so much to do until that time. And first of all, I will always say we have a good government because I have traveled as a resource person into different countries. And over again, I thank our good government and our good leaders. And not too long ago, I was sitting and talking about this with my sister. She is very land conscious also. We own areas up in that area under her name. And from our ancestors from way back. And we talk about how serious it is to be land conscious. And then she said, and first of all, We must pray for the people that are thinking about this land and will know how to decide and be fair to people that own this land and have been carried down for many generations. My name is Leela Oman, and a lot of you know that I am a storyteller. When I was asked to speak here, I couldn't help but thinking of this little short story, if you will bear with me. It's about a loon and a muskrat. One warm summer day, big fat loon with nice black and white plumes landed on this lake and hollered, "Ah, ah, my lake, my lake." On its little mud pad was a little muskrat eating. And he wasn't impressed, and he hollered back at the loon, "Even in winter time, your lake." And this sort of impressed me very much, because this little story had been handed down to us from a time immemorial. And our people understood this big loon and this muskrat. This big loon came when the weather is nice and warm and everything was quiet and good. But this little muskrat burrowed into the land itself. And this lake was its home at all times. The deep end of this lake and the shallow end of this lake, this little muskrat knows. Right here, I will question myself and you too. Which one am I? Am I the one that comes in during fair weather time and want to claim? Or am I the one that burrow in and know hard times? And when it comes to subsistence, we worked all during the summer. We were made to prepare for the winter. And that's why the land is very precious to us. And when we were preparing for 1971, just before December 17, 1971, we were working on our land claims. We were made to be aware of this. Luckily, I was working where there was an office that were issuing land areas. And we were helping these people to fill out applications, and somebody was measuring the feet and all. And we knew when that time comes, we will be respecting the boundaries. Before land claims, the whole country was ours. There was harmonious living. Nobody was fighting about our land or who owns this or where was the little post. We were neighbors all the time, kind to each other. Now it has changed. Even people that have been very great friends are now enemies over those boundaries. But here is one thing I know. On this land claim that I had boundaries of, nobody is going to tell me where and when to get off. And that is something that is very precious to me, and know what ownership to something is. And also, hanging on to it, and during our fishing time, harvesting from this area, I happened to look over where my son was sitting. And he is now 40 years old this year. And I thought to myself, he was just only 6 years old when I start working on this ground, preparing for the winter. And today he does not realize just my tribulations and trials and hard work had made it possible that he can sit on that piece of ground without somebody coming around and tell him, "Hey, you get off, that's mine." And that is very precious to me right now. And about money given to us and land given to us. Oh, our government has been very, very generous about this. But let's think of it. Our people, from generation to generation, had held this land. Who owns it? By Aboriginal rights, I own it, and you own it. And then they are getting rid of that right on account of giving us this money and that land. And our government is very generous on that land. But there is one thing we must remember. When they are generous and say, this will be your money and this will be your land, but is a small word. But is a very small word. But it covers a lot of territory. But what? Down the line, we have much to think on, much to worry about, much to work on. And who am I to tell anybody this when you already know? I must keep busy all the time. And trying to lead your people and helping them out all the time from day to day, running from one thing to the next. It's real hard. But we can always try again. And AFN really helped us out and made it possible of our land claims in 1971. But now we are facing another big hurdle. Who is going to be strong at that time? Who is going to be willing to stand in front of people? Who is going to be strong and know how to lead? Only time will tell, and we must tell and encourage our young people to keep right on and know what it's all about. And on top of it, I am so glad of our education, our schools and universities, and everything that our government provide for us. That is enabling our people to know how to put their own ideas across. They didn't have it when first white people started coming around. Our people didn't know how to deal with new people that were coming around because they did not